Masechet Baba Kama Daf Samech Bet. We will complete the sixth perek and begin the seventh perek on this daf. We saw the machloket between Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda regarding concealed items that are destroyed by fire. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, if I start a fire and it goes from my field into your field and it destroys a pile of grain and the stuff inside, hidden inside the grain, I am liable. Whereas according to Chachamim, I am only liable for grain and not for anything hidden in the grain. If I light the fire on my own property and I give you permission to put some barley on my property. So in that case, we saw even the Biuda would agree with Chachamim that since I gave you permission only to put barley and you went and you put other things in it or wheat, then I only have to pay for the value of barley because that's all I gave your permission for. And I said, okay, fine, I'll watch your barley, but I didn't agree to watch something more expensive. And therefore, everyone would agree that I am only limited in my liability. All right, we're continuing with that theme. Amar Rava noten dinar zahav leisha v'amar leizahari bo shel kesef hu hizi katu meshalemet dinar zahav mishum damar la mai hava lech legabe de'azakte. So I give a golden coin to a woman. I say, listen, can you hold on to this? And I tell her, be careful because it's made out of silver. Okay, why would I say that? I don't know. But for some reason, I told her it's silver. Maybe I don't want her to go and think it's so expensive and decide to spend it. Whatever reason, even though it was in fact gold, I tell her, be careful, it's silver. Now she goes and damages it on purpose. Why does she do that? I don't know. Maybe she's angry, whatever. She throws it into the sea or smashes it. And now I come and say, oh, where is that coin that I gave you to watch? She has to pay for the coin because she caused the damage and she has to pay the full value of a golden coin. Why? Because I can tell her, what business did you have to damage it? Why'd you damage my thing? I told you to watch it. What's the difference? What it was, right? You shouldn't have damaged it on purpose. And therefore, even though I said it's a silver coin, you have to pay the value of the gold coin. Pashabo, Mishale Mishal Kesef, Damrale, Netiruta de Chaspa, Kabili Alai, Netiruta de Davala, Kabili Alai. However, if she was just negligent, she didn't smash it on purpose, she left it out. And then in a place where people could walk by and see, and then some they stole it, she didn't lock the door, and someone came and stole it, or she lost it. So then she only has to pay the value of a silver coin, even though it was in fact a golden coin. Why? Because she can say, I accepted upon myself safeguarding for a silver coin, but not safeguarding for a gold coin. If I knew it was gold coin, maybe it was inside a package. Inside a bag or something. So she didn't see it. She says, if I knew it was a gold coin, then I would have made sure to double lock the door. But I thought it was just a silver coin. So that's why I didn't take such precautions to guard it. And therefore, since she didn't just destroy it on purpose, but it was just negligent, therefore she only has to pay the value of the golden coin. So that's a value of the silver coin. Okay, so Rava is making an important distinction here. However, Amar le'Rav Mordechai le'Rav Asher, Atun b'Rava matnitu la, anan mi matnita peshita lan. Rav Mordechai tells Rav Asher, oh, are you learning this halacha from Rava? Okay, we don't know. We hear it here directly from Rava, but obviously it was transmitted by Rava's students after him. Rav Asher repeated the statement of Rava, and Mordechai said, well, oh, you're learning the halacha from Rava, the Amora. We have a baraita that teaches that this same principle to us. We have an even higher source. What is it? It's the baraita that was at the end of the last daf. Chitin v'chipan b'seorim, seorim v'chipan b'chitin, eno meshalem ela deme seorim bilbad, alma amar le, netiruta disare, kabili alai, hachaname amra le, netiruta didaba la kabili alai. If someone comes to me and says, and asks to put some grain in my field to hold on to it, and then I'm negligent about fire, and I end up burning it down. So let's say he asked me to put to store barley, and then he in fact put wheat there, but covered it on top with barley, so it looks like it was barley. Or he put barley there, and he covered it with wheat. In any case, I only have to pay for the value of barley. Why? Because I can say to him, listen, you asked me to put your barley there. I said, okay. By doing that, I accepted upon myself responsibility to safeguard barley, but which is cheaper. I did not accept upon myself responsibility to safeguard wheat. That's more expensive. So if you ask for barley and you end up putting wheat there, I don't have to pay for it. Here too, the same principle. She, the woman, can say, listen, you told me it was a silver coin. I didn't check. I assumed it was a silver coin. I safeguarded enough silver coin. I accepted that responsibility up to that amount. I was not going to insure it and pay for something that happened as a gold coin. I never accepted that, and therefore I'm not responsible. And again, both of these cases is where there is negligence. I didn't light it on fire on purpose directly, but rather I was just negligent in where I put the, I made the fire, and so too she was negligent and didn't lock the door. If it was direct destruction, like in the first case, then one would be fully liable. Amar Rav Shema'it Miletad Rabbi Yehuda Velayada Not Maihi. Rav said, I heard a halacha related to that which Rabbi Yehuda said, but I'm not sure what it is. Rabbi Yehuda is the one that said one is liable even for concealed items that a fire goes out and destroys. But I don't remember what the related halacha was. Amar Shmuel velayada Abba ma shemiat le. Shmuel, his colleague, says, "Oh, Abba, that was his first name. He's saying as a friend, right? Abba, you don't know what the halacha was? I'll tell you. I do know. The Rabbi Yehuda mechayev al nisket tamun be'esh asu takanat nigzal be'isho. According to the Rabbi Yehuda, who says that something that is concealed, the one is liable if he sets fire to it. The rabbis made a takana that the same as a robber for his fire. Takanat nigzal bisho. They apply takanat nigzal also to someone who has damaged by fire. What is takanat nigzal? This means if someone comes and robs me, they come into my house and they take two TVs and three necklaces. And so I come to court and I say, this guy robbed me. The court judge says, okay, what did he take? Well, he took two TVs and three necklaces. So how can you prove it, right? The robber doesn't have it anymore. We don't know where it is. So how can I prove it? So the rabbi said, listen, I don't have to prove it, right? Because I know that he came, everybody agrees that this guy robbed my house, but what exactly did he take? How much does he have to pay? So the rabbi said, I can take an oath. And I swear this is the list of items he took. This is how much it's worth. And then the court will believe my oath and he has to pay that amount. That is takanat nigzal, because otherwise, when someone robs something, it's probably gone. And then it would be difficult to assess what the damage is. So this is the halakha related to the biyuda that Shmuel remembered. For someone who has, let's say I have a pile of grain and I had some items inside, and you started a fire next door and it spread and destroyed not only my grain pile but the stuff inside. So then you're going to say, well, what was in the grain pile? I don't know, I didn't see. So the rabbi said the same thing. I can testify and say, oh, listen, I was hiding two TVs and three shovels in there. That's what you have to pay for. And so we believe him. Okay, bye, Amemar. Asu takanat nigzal b'masod ola. And once you brought up this takanat nigzal, we Amemad asked, can we apply this also to an informer? Let's say someone informs to the government against me, right? They go to the government and said, listen, I know this person, he did this and that, and he has $1 million, right, in this, hidden in this place. And the government goes and legally, I guess, goes to the government, unjustly. It's not like the governments today where that are basically, follow protection of rights and privacy and are more or less just. But back then, someone informs against the government, you might never see the victim again. Okay, so here, someone informed against me, and now the government came, and they took $1 million from where I was hiding it. So can I take him to court? And I say, listen, this guy informed me, and because of his informing, I lost $1 million, and then I can, well, they say, how do you know how much was taken? I'll make a swear, and this is how much was taken from me. So does that work? Can we apply takanat nigzal, and I can collect that money from the informer? And the answer is aliba demadamar la dainin dina digar melati ba'alach demasorot nami la daininan. So well, it's going to depend on dina digar me. That means liability because of indirect action, like yedama and other areas of halacha. In this case, the informer didn't steal directly from me. He didn't break into my house and take that money. He just gave information to the government, or, you know, the government here seems like they're acting like kind of like a mafia, a type of government. So he only gave them information, and they're the ones that stole. So he didn't steal directly. So because it's indirect liability, so that it will depend on this, which is a big machloket. According to the opinion that says we do not judge cases of indirect liability, in other words, you cannot hold someone accountable for causing damage indirectly, then we have no question here, because the informer, we would not judge him, right? It's true, he didn't do something very nice, but he can't be held liable because he's not the one that stole. But we'll ask according to the other opinion, who says that we do take people to court even when they do a indirect an indirect causation of liability. We can hold them accountable for it. According to that opinion, then we ask, "Asu takanat nigzal b'masor de mishtaba b'shakil ola teko." In that case, how much will the liability be? The government came; they took the money. We don't know how much it is, but I come and claim, and I'm willing to swear it was $1 million. So then, can we rely on that vow to extract that money from the informer? And we leave this question unresolved. Another story. Hahu gabra dibtash bichsafta dechabre shadye benahara. Someone comes and kicks my safe into the river. Now he doesn't know what's in the safe. I know how much was in the safe. Now he's clearly going to be liable for doing that. But the question is how much? I, the owner of the safe, come and I say, listen, I had $1 million in that safe. So Rav Asher was looking into this and say, in this case, do we believe the claimant that was $1 million? Right? Should I make a vow? If I make a vow, then will I be believed? So while Rav Asher is thinking about this, his colleagues and students came and said to him, wait, why? What's your question? This is the same as our Mishnah. The Mishnah said that even Chachamim would agree with Rabbi Yehuda that if someone lights my house on fire, they are responsible for everything inside. Even though they are that's concealed items, they're still responsible, because this is a normal way that people keep things in their homes. So anything that you'd keep in a home, right? Furniture and money and valuables, right? All kept in the home. So you have to pay for that. Here too, it would be the same thing. What do you keep in a safe? Valuable items. So if I come and say, yes, I had this many valuable items, I had $1 million in it, so then I should be believed. So what's the question? It seems like there's a clear-cut case. It'll be the same as the Mishnah. So Rav Asher said, listen, if the claimant said I had $1 million of cash in there, then indeed I would be believed, because that's the way of people. They keep cash in safes. But in this case, what were we talking about? It wasn't cash, but rather a pearl. I come and claim, oh, there was a pearl worth $1 million in there. In that case, do people usually leave jewelry in a safe or not? For sure, they keep cash in a safe, but it wasn't clear to him whether jewelry is usually kept in a safe. And therefore, does it fit into the category of a house where you keep all kinds of things in the house? Or is it more like a grain pile where you don't usually keep jewelry and things in a grain pile? Maybe you keep a saddle or a shovel, but you don't usually keep other things in a grain pile, and therefore, according to Rabbanan, one should not be liable because it's like a concealed item, and you know what? There was a when I kicked your safe into the river, I assumed that there was some money. I didn't think there was going to be jewelry in it, right? So do we say that? And that is we leave this question also open. Amar le Rav Yemal Rav Asher, ta'in kasa de chaspa bebira. Mai? Amar le hazena I inish amid hu de it le kasa de chaspa ina me inish mehem nahu de mifkede ina she gabe mish taba v'shakel. Vila lav kol kemine. His home was burnt down by fire, right? And we just said that you have to pay for anything in the home. And the owner of the home says, I had a silver goblet in there. Very expensive silver goblet worth $10,000. So are we going to believe him? Right? Because it's kind of an unusual item. Most people don't have $10,000 silver goblets in their house. So do we believe him? And Rav Asher's answer is, we see. What kind of person is he? Is he a wealthy person that would typically have such an expensive goblet? Well, then yes, you believe him. Or is he someone who's very trustworthy that people safeguard things with him? And then so maybe someone gave him a silver goblet and said, listen, can you hold on to this for me? And yes, then we can assume that it was in fact in his house. In that case, yes. But if not, if he's a poor and untrustworthy person, and it's not likely that he would have such an expensive item in his house, then we do not believe him, and the guy who started the fire does not have to pay for it. Amar le Rav Adabere Rav Avya Rav Asher, ma ben gazlan le hamsan. So they asked Rav Asher, what's the difference between a robber and an extortioner? Amar le hamsan yahib dameh, gazlan la yahib dameh, that a extortioner gives money. A robber doesn't give money. A robber just goes, he sees something that you have, and he just grabs it, and he goes away. Or he goes into your house, and he takes it, and he goes away. But a chamsan, that's different. He sees you have a nice sandwich there that you're eating on the bench in the park. He says, I'll take that sandwich. He grabs the sandwich, but he gives you $5. He puts $5 in your pocket and says, thank you. See, he's not really stealing. He's just, buying it by force and without your permission. So I don't know if he pays the full value or not, but he may break into your house, take your TV, and leave $100. So at least he doesn't think he's stealing because he's paying for it. But that's still not moral. Amar le iyabe dame hamsan karit le. And Rav Adah said, wait a second. If he pays for it, why would you call him a hamsan? Right? What's bad about that? Is he really stealing if he pays for it? Amar Rav Huna talu vezabin zebine zebine. If Rav Huna has a principle that says, if I go and I string someone up, I hold him by his collar and pick him up, and I say, you better sell me your house right now for this money or else. So I am coercing him into a sale. And he says, okay, fine, I'll sell it. The sale is a valid sale, right? It is a legally binding sale. Even though I forced him to do it, I forced him into it, still, he said yes. So therefore, this person, the extortioner, should not be called a thief. It should be a valid sale. Maybe it's not nice to do, but it's still a valid sale, and you can't call it a thief that he can go and get it back. And the answer to that is, Lakashi hada maroseani hada lo maroseani. It's different if the seller, even though he's coerced, says, okay, fine, I agree, or if he doesn't say, I agree. So if I go up to someone and I say, that's a nice sandwich, you better sell it to me for $5 or else. And he says, okay, right? Maybe he's scared. I push him into it. But if he says, okay, it is a valid sale. But if I don't ask him, I just grab the sandwich, put $5 in his pocket and walk away, and he never said, okay, then that sale is not valid. So that's the difference between a chamsan. A chamsan doesn't wait for the guy to say, rose ani, and therefore that's completely stealing. And it's not even a valid sale. He can go back, take him to court, give him back the $5 and get his sandwich back. All right, last Mishnah of the Perek. Get sheyasami tachat hapatish v'hizik hayav. If I am a blacksmith and I'm banging away And as I'm banging, a spark flies out from the hammer, banging against the anvil, and a spark flies out and causes a fire and causes damage. I am liable because I have to check my, so make a good, a safe workplace environment, and I can't go and start banging in the middle of an area where there's going to be flammable things that will be destroyed. I have to make sure to keep it inside my store, and sufficiently inside with safeguards so that it won't go out and burn things. Gamal, Hayshaya Taun Pishtan Abab Reshut Harabim, Vinichtas Pishtano Tochechanut, Vedalku Benero, Shel Chenvani Vedliket Abira, Bal Gamal Hayav, Hinech Chenvani Rebachus, Chenvani Hayav, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Bener Chanukah Patur. And now, the other way around, someone's outside the store. The guy inside the store has a lamp, which is normal. He's allowed to have a lamp in his store, you can see. And the guy outside has a camel that has so much flax, the flax is sticking out. And as the camel driver is walking in the street, the flax enters, which is sticking out, enters into the store and gets lit on fire from the lamp of the shopkeeper. Shopkeeper did nothing wrong. It's not his problem. And then as the camel keeps walking, he spreads the fire and burns down the building. The camel driver is liable because he should make sure that the load on his camel is not sticking out and gonna cause damage in that way. However, if the storekeeper left his lamp outside in front of his store, then the storekeeper is responsible. Why'd you put your lamp outside where it's likely that's going to cause fire to things passing by? Okay, so it depends where it is, inside the store versus outside the store. One exception, according to the Biyuda, is Ner Chanukah, if it's Chanukah and the store owner is putting his Chanukah lamp outside, then that's okay because that's expected. Everybody on Chanukah puts their lamp outside, Pirsumei Nisa. And if it's Chanukah, then all the people walking have to know it's Chanukah. There's going to be lamps all around. Make sure to be careful not to have camels or anything sticking out that will go on fire. That's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion only, as a minority opinion, whereas Chachamim would not agree, and they would not say that the store owner is not liable. They would say the store owner still has to put safeguards to make sure that something that is Chanukah lamp won't light things on fire. Amar Avina Mishmeh De'erava Shema Mina Merbi Yehuda Ner Chanukah Mitzvah Lanicha Betoch Asara. So Avina says the name of Rava. We can learn from the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that the Chanukah lamp, that there's a mitzvah, either an obligation or a good idea to put it lower than 10 tefachim. First of all, it'd be easier for people to see, right? If it's lower than 10 tefachim, it also is more pirsumei nisa, because usually you put a light high up so that it spreads out the light. By putting it under 10 tefachim, it's noticeable. This is not a regular light. Oh, you're putting this here for a special reason. And they'll say, oh, it's because it's a Chanukah lamp. Okay. By the way, see from here, it sounds like they're only lighting one lamp, which is the basic mitzvah, not the mehadrin or the mehadrin mina mehadrin. They have a whole Chanukah of eight lamps and one for everybody in the family, right? The simple thing of one lamp. So he says, it sounds from here that it is a best practice to make it low down under 10 tefachim. Why? Because if you think that it's fine and even good to put the Ner Chanukah higher than 10 tefachim, then why would the Biyuda may say that the owner of the store is exempt? We should tell the owner of the store, it's very beautiful that you want to make a Ner Chanukah outside to do Pirsum Hanes, but you should have put it higher than with camels and their riders. You should put it high up so that it wouldn't cause damage, right? Who asked you to put it low down? Ela lav shema mina mitzvah lanicha betoch hasara. Must be that the mitzvah is to place it low down, and that's why he put it low down. Otherwise, we should hold him liable, right? Just because you want to fulfill the mitzvah doesn't mean you can cause You can cause danger if there's a way to fulfill the mitzvah without causing danger, right? Put it up high. So therefore, we can prove from here that in fact you have to put it down low. Amri la le'olam em alach afilu malam asara. Maya mat iba elech lanucha le'malam igamal ve'rochbo kevad mitzvah asik kule hay la atrehu rabbanan. We say no. In fact, it's permitted to put the Chanukah lamp higher than 10 tevachim if you want. And what was your question? That if so, then we should hold the store owner liable because he should have put a Chanukah lamp higher than when a camel and its rider usually are, so that it would avoid any damage. But that was your question. But I have an answer. Since he's doing a mitzvah, the rabbis don't want to trouble a person so much to say, oh, yes, you should make a Chanukah lamp and you have to put it out of danger high up. Now, people aren't going to want to do the mitzvah if it's so inconvenient. He's going to have to go, get a ladder, make a shelf, put it up high. So you know what? They're not going to do it at all. So therefore, the rabbis did not impose that. They gave special permission. They said, listen, if you want to put it up high, that's fine. You can still fulfill the mitzvah by putting it high. But if you don't want to trouble yourself, we don't want to trouble you to do it. We'd rather make it easier for you. And so if you put it down low, at least according to the Biyuda, you'll be exempt from any damage that it causes, because everybody should know that it's Chanukah now, and they have to keep their camels towards the side so that it won't light things on fire. Interestingly, even though this hypothesis is rejected, nevertheless, according to Halacha Lemaaseh, Rambam says that it's best to put a Chanukah lamp but higher than 3 and less than 10 tefachim, so that it's more noticeable. It's clear that this is a special lamp. It's still permitted to put it higher than 10. And now we have these, giant menorahs, chanukahs, all over the place. And some people like to put it higher up in their porch, or so people can see it when they look up. But nevertheless, actually, the lechatechila, the best performance of the mitzvah, is in fact lower than 10 tefachim. Amar Rav Kahana, darash Rav Natan bar Min Yomi, mishmei derabbi Tanchum, ner Chanukah shenicha lemala me'asrim, ama pesula kesukah v'chuchma voy. Now I mentioned the lowest one can make it. What's the highest? Rav Kahana said that Rav Natan bar Min Yomi said the following in an official public lecture, which makes it halacha lemaaseh, in the name of Rabbi Tanchum. If you one makes a puts a Chanukah lamp higher than 20 amot, about 30 feet high, it's no good. The same as sukkah and mavoi. Sukkah, the schach, cannot be higher than 20 tefachim, because then you won't know that you're sitting in sukkah. Your eye doesn't go that high, even in your peripheral vision. And so you'll just, you're sitting just outside and you don't see the schach. And similarly, mavoi, if you want to make an alleyway into a shared space that everybody shares a meal, so you have to make an indication at the entrance of the alleyway. You have to put a beam. That beam cannot be higher than 20 amot, because then no one will see it. So it has to be lower down so you can see it. So that's the same thing and same reason for the Ner Chanukah. Higher than 20 amot, nobody looks up that high, so it has to be lower down. All right, so these giant Chabad Chanukahs also, we should make sure that they're not that giant, and they should be less than about 30 feet so that everyone can see them and enjoy and have Pirsume Nisa. Hadran Alach Hakones. We now begin the 7th perek. The first 6 perekim were focusing on damage done by someone's property, by their ox, by eating or trampling, or by one's pit or fire. But now we're going to talk about damages done by a human being directly, and we're starting off with a thief. Meruba midat tashlume kefel midat tashlume arba'a v'chamisha. She midat tashlume kefel noheget ben b'davar sheyesh bo ruach chayim ben b'davar she'en bo ruach chayim. Midat tashlume arba'a v'chamisha ena noheget ele b'shor v'sebil b'al shneimar ki ignov ish shor o se utbacho o mecharo. If someone steals an item, he has to pay back not only the original item, but also more than that item. How much does he pay? For most things, it's tashlume kefel. He has to pay double of what he stole. But for some items, animals, he has to pay back 4 or 5 five times it. And now the law, even though four or five times is a lot more than double, but the law of double applies more broadly than the law of four or five. How so? The application of paying back double, that applies to all things, whether it's alive or not alive. You know, it doesn't matter what you steal, you have to pay back double. But the application of 405 only applies to, specifically to an ox or a sheep. If someone steals an ox, they have to pay five times. And for if they steal a sheep, they have to pay four times. So even though it's a lot more, it only applies in very specific instances. אין הגונב אחר הגנב משלם תשלומי כפל, ולא תבע ולא מוכר אחר הגנב משלם תשלומי ארבעה וחמישה. Someone who steals from a thief does not have to pay double. Right? Someone stole something, and I steal it from the thief, and then I'm caught. I have to give back the item, but I don't have to pay double. Only the first thief does. And similarly, someone who steals something from a thief, an animal, an ox or a sheep, and then slaughters it and or sells it, you only have to pay 405 if you not only steal, but also slaughter or sell it. But the second thief does not have to pay 405, even if he stole and slaughtered or sold it. This also only applies to the first thief. So that's a similarity between the two. Now, we ask about another difference between the two. You said that the double payment applies more broadly, but you only give one example. Ve'ilu midat tashlome kefel noheget ben beganab ben betoen ta'anat ganab, u'midat tashlome arba v'chamisha ena noheget ele beganab bilvad lo katani. Notice that the Mishnah does not give the following example, that paying back double applies to a thief and also to a watchman who claims that it was stolen. Let's say I'm a Shomer Chinam. I'm watching this ox for you, and I'm not getting paid for it. And then I come and claim, oh, sorry, it was stolen. But I'm lying. I swear to that fact. But then turns out I actually had it the whole time. So then I have to pay you back not only the original amount, but more than that. Now let's say it's an item that you gave me, a vase. I have to pay back a double. And what about for an ox? So the Mishnah does not make a distinction and say that for a vase, one pays back double, right? But for four and five times, if it's an ox, that is only for a thief has to pay four or five times, but not for a watchman. The Mishnah does not make that distinction. And therefore, can we conclude that there is no distinction? And in fact, not only a thief has to pay double or four and five for an ox, but even a watchman also, if it's a vase, has to pay double. If it's an ox or a sheep, then would have to pay four and five times. That's what it would seem from the fact that the Mishnah doesn't include this as a difference. It must be that they're the same. And this would support the opinion of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, who said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that a watchman who claims that it was stolen and swears, sorry, it was stolen, if with something about something that he is watching, he has to pay double if it's a regular item, and he has to but if it's an ox or a sheep and he claims it was stolen and he slaughtered or sold it, then the watchman has to pay four and five. So you see, this Mishnah is a good support for Rabbi Yochanan's statement. Since the Mishnah does not make a distinction between them, we can infer that there is no distinction when even a watchman has to pay. That's one version. Ika d'amre, or another version, is we ask it as a question, but then reject this proof. Lema misaya le Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, tamar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba amar Rabbi Yochanan. Hatoen tanat gana pikadu mesham tashume kefer. Kefel, tavach macham mesham tashume arba v'chamisha. The second version proposes, is this Mishnah a good proof for the statement of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, who said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that a watchman who claims that something was stolen, he has to pay double if it's any item, and if it's an ox, also it's also an ox. If he steals an ox but does not slaughter it or sell it, then he has to pay double for the ox. If he claims the ox is stolen and he slaughters it or sells it, then he has to pay 4 and 5 times. So is this Mishnah a support? Since Rabbi Yochanan says they're equal, and the Mishnah does not list this as a place where there's a difference between these laws, that one applies more broadly than the other, must be that the Mishnah agrees that they both apply not only to a thief, but also to a watchman, and we reject this. Mikatane en ben mirubakatane tena v'shiyer. No, the Mishnah does not say there's no difference between the two except for this, and it only gives one difference of where one applies to all items and the other applies only to an ox and a sheep. It doesn't say that this is the only difference. It just gives one difference. Here's one way in which Kefel applies more broadly, but it's only giving one and omitting others. The Mishnah is not claiming to be comprehensive, and so it could be that, in fact, the author of the Mishnah would not agree with Rabbi Yochanan and would say that the law of 4 and 5 only applies to a thief and does not apply to a watchman. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen v'amen.